Dinky Dawson, and Tony Rain, and we're kicking off our podcast, Two Pints in a Corner. Chachi, how are you, mate?
I'm good, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. I'm here with Dinky.
Hey, Chachi.
Dinky!
Good to hear your voice, lad.
It's great to speak to you. It's always great to be on the phone with a legend, right, Tony? This guy's amazing.
That's right.
Love
that's
you,
why,
Dinky.
Well, you're a legend, too.
That's how I think of you, too, Chachi.
That's what we are.
Oh,
you're a legend. You're a legend.
No,
yes,
my friend.
Yes,
you
yes,
are.
Yes.
I'm just a legend.
Well, it's good to talk to you, Bob.
Yeah, welcome to Two Pints in the Corner.
Yeah, we've been doing this for a few weeks now, Chachi, and we'll have a series of about 15 podcasts, and it's really just a retro on the channel. And we know the other one that was out there was kind of negative connotations, so.
Mm-hmm.
What we're doing with this is we're just really trying to get, you know, memories of how diverse the channel was, and that's what was interesting about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Now, my memory's a little sketchy, but I'll do my best.
Well,
we're smoking a lot of pot at the channel. Back.
Well, yeah, but that was all part of it too, you know. And that's one thing we've been talking about a lot is that, you know, the channel had... the scene there wasn't necessarily just the shows you were going to see. People used to go to the club to go to the club.
It was an experience. It was the whole thing. Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about.
Good. What are your what's your favorite show you remember?
Yeah.
Well, I used to always MC Tribe.
Tribe.
James Brown was great.
Yep.
I missed Roy Orbison. The Spinal Tap was an experience.
Yeah.
I drove a couple of them to the show. And again, my memory is sketchy, but lunchtime shows, we did many there. We did Shake the Faith on Ash Wednesday.
Pretty amazing.
You know, so we did a lot of things.
Yeah, the BCN lunches were good.
They were great.
Yeah.
Oh, with Tank and even Mark and you were there. And the girls went there too, Lisa Tracks, all of them from BCN.
Everyone.
Yeah, because it was such a place to be, especially 2 o'clock in the morning you could go to, you know, you could go everywhere else in town and then come over the channel and see the last band.
That's right. And then walk over to Waylou's and have some Chinese food.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Waylou's was good. I like Waylou's.
And get some cold tea.
Cold tea.
Down
in
the zone.
Well, we're laughing. All you people that hear this, we're laughing because it was such a good laugh.
Always good stuff. So things are good, Chachi. I hear about your Beatles shows doing very well, right?
Yeah.
Doing great. We have a lunchtime show on Sunday at City Winery. It's Father's Day and Paul McCartney's birthday. And the Guitar Center gave us a Hofner Paul bass to give away.
That's cool.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah.
Terrific.
It's fantastic.
Second year
they did that for us.
No, that's great.
That's through Hirsch Gardner.
Hirsch is still over there. That's what I thought.
Has it been building pretty good? Are you getting a good crowd?
Yeah, you know, this is they tried it with us 22 months ago, and we've been doing it once a month ever since.
That's great.
That's
great. And we're working on the one for Cape Cod this August. So,
looking forward to that too.
Getting them together down here. And
Stephanie says hello.
Yeah, great. I should tell you, David, he's got a thing coming up this week because you helped us so much with the book. His paperback is out next month.
Oh.
Yeah, so they're putting a paperback version of it out.
Oh, I'd love to help him. That's a great book. I use it as a reference book on my show all the time.
Great.
It's great to have that kind of stuff with reference right in front of you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Oh, yeah, he has things that people have forgotten. He's found all these people in the UK that were around. It's fantastic, well-researched book.
And we just lost Tony Brownwell, though.
I know.
And Tony was just another special guy. You know, I mean, no ifs, no buts. And as McCartney used to say, if you want to know about the Beatles, you better go ask Tony.
He knows.
That's right. The circle is getting smaller and smaller.
Certainly is.
We definitely. What can I say? I mean, I'm fighting my guts out right now, but I've gone through a lot with things, and I just One of our friends who was a channel photographer for many years is not doing so well too, which is John Boy Franklin.
Yeah, yeah. I heard. Now he's in hospice. It's awful.
Yeah. Yeah. It catches up. Our age catches up. Things what we do catch up on us. And so on. You can live the pure life, and it still comes and gets you.
I never thought I'd be turning 67 in July. I never thought I'd make it this far.
I didn't think you were that old, Church.
You're not that old.
Yeah, thank you.
I'll be 69 in August.
Wow.
I beat you both. I'm 77 in August.
God bless you, my friend.
Yeah,
and after all these cancers and stuff like that, I'm still hanging on. I'm in here with my arm bandaged up after having major surgery to fuse, vascular surgery to fuse artery and veins together for get ready for chemo, not chemo, dialysis for kidneys. If it's not one thing, after I've all these cancers and now I'm going to get killed from the damn, you know, kidneys.
Praying for you, Dinky.
But if we have the music like you and I and Tony and Nancy and every one of us around here if you've got the music in you go with it. And that's what life is making you happen. And the music will make you happen.
Keeps things positive.
Keeps it positive as hell.
I just saw Herb Alpert 2 weeks ago at 88 years old.
Wow.
Doing a show with his wife from Brazil 66. Up in Nashua, and it was sensational.
I love him. Great stuff.
Yeah, it was very cool. It was very cool.
Yeah.
Sold-out show on a Monday night.
So you just talked a little bit about some of the shows that the channel that you were at, and especially the lunchtime shows, like with everyone there.
So are you running tape now and everything?
We're recording everything, and
record
then
everything.
Dinky does an edit, and we get it together.
Okay. Well, great, yeah. I'll start if you want. If you want me to just do a little bit of a monologue.
You're our man of the world, you know.
No, please.
It's very casual.
Well, thank you, yes. That's
so
I like.
Go for it. Here you go there. It's all yours, Chachi.
Okay, buddy. Pleasure to be here with the legendary Dinky Dawson and, of course, our dear friend, also legendary Tony Raine. And I've known these two gentlemen since the 80s, the early 80s, and one of the greatest joys of my life has been the music, obviously. I was born in Boston, raised in Cambridge, saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show on February 9th, 1964. I was only 8 years old.
I've got a ticket.
I was only, 7 or 8 years old. I had older brothers and a sister, but you know what? I was there. I remember it. It changed my life. It was all about music. I wanted to be Ringo, and so
you should have set your sights higher, Chachi.
And I love the fact that he was on the riser and playing and having fun, and I wanted to be Ringo. So I was blessed because in the '60s I realized, you know, certainly I can't be a Beatle. There was already four. I wasn't a very good drummer, although I still have my Ludwig drum kit. I'm looking at it right now, set up in my living room, my Ringo kit. And so I realized, listening to the radio in the 60s, you know, WBZAM, RKO, MEX, I would hear these DJs interviewing the Beatles. And so I realized in the 60s, you know, I want to be a disc jockey because I carried my transistor everywhere I went. And then in the 70s, in 1970, I found the FM dial, changed everything, and then I found WBCN. And throughout the 70s, I just loved BCN, Charles Lacordaire specifically. And so I graduated high school in the 70s, and then I got a job at Polaroid, and everyone said, you're set for life at Polaroid, you're going to get a pension, you have nothing to worry about for the rest of your life. 1980 rolls around, and I always thought, you know what, John Lennon lives 4 hours away. I could always go to New York and run into him on the street. I always said that I would do that, but then I never did, and then we lost him in 80. And so in 81, I sat at my desk at Polaroid. I wrote a letter to Lacordaire. I said, I want to work in radio. I love BCN. It's my goal to get a job at BCN. I got a call back a week or two later, and that following Saturday night, I volunteered to answer phones. And I volunteered for a year until they hired me in 1982, and it was the biggest day of my life getting a job at WBCN. Yeah. And so I was hired by David Bieber. I was his assistant with no real experience except being there for a year, volunteering every day. After Polaroid, I'd go to BCN. Greatest thing in my life, hanging out with these guys who were celebrities.
Right.
And one of the big things about BCN was how they externalized what they did. It certainly was a different time back then. No social media, magazines, television, newspapers. That was it. And one of the great things about BCN were they sponsored concerts all over town.
Yeah,
right.
And I still, to this day, still consider the channel the greatest venue in Boston. It was the epitome of what rock was all about.
Absolutely.
And they had all, and the great thing was it was a very diverse club. It wasn't a quote-unquote rock club. It was all kinds of clubs in one. Sunday all-ages shows.
Yeah,
I remember being out front one day, and this car pulls up at the channel, and it's a little like Corolla, a little like Toyota car. And then David Alexander's standing there, the door opens, the guy gets out, and David says, "Chachi, I want you to meet King Sonny Ade." And
I'm like, "Yeah, there you go."
You know, and that's just an example of the diversity of the club.
Yeah,
not even talking about the atmosphere, how it was just like, It sweated, the wall sweated rock and roll. It was just a great place to be. But you know, the thing about the channel was it wasn't you just going to see a band. And we just mentioned this a little bit ago. Yeah. It was an experience, much like Fenway Park is for concerts. It's more, and it's also a huge experience, not just going to see a band.
Right.
And that's what it was like at the channel. And what I mean by that is, everybody met there. We always ended up there together, whether we had other events earlier in the evening. We always found our way to the channel, no matter what was going on there, because it was a great place to hang and be with other music fans.
Exactly.
And whether it was Piggy's Pizza or, you know, the merch that they would sell, or the game room, and just seeing all your friends. And our friends were the doormen, the managers, the bookers, the staff, the bartenders.
Yeah.
We're all friends. And back then, Dinky and Tony, I had a white Corvette. And so I would pull up, and they always had a space for me right by the door. And they always just treated me so nicely. But, you know, it wasn't just because who I was. I worked at BCN. They treated everyone like that. It was very communal. It was a great hang, and it led me to do so many different promotions with BCN at the channel.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of my memory's sketchy at this moment, nowadays, but I remember, first of all, David Alexander produced my cable TV show called Dirty Water, which we shot at the channel.
I remember that, yep.
And I had interviewed many bands that were playing, most memorably Devo. I had a session with Devo and a bunch of other bands. I have no idea where those shows are. I don't know if David Alexander has them. But we would tape them behind the venue on the banks of the water there. And the band would come out and I'd interview them. It was just so much fun. So I had my Dirty Water cable TV show. And,
One question about that. You mentioned earlier you were there when Spinal Tap came. Can you tell me, did you see the roof fall on them?
I recall seeing a bucket on the stage and water dripping into the bucket. I don't recall seeing the stage, but I do remember going to Howard Johnson's in Kenmore Square, the hotel, and I picked up a couple of them and drove them to the channel. And I was a big Spinal Tap fan. And so I have the movie poster signed to me by all the band members.
Nice.
And it was just an amazing film. And even more amazing to see them at the channel on, I think it was a very rainy night.
Right.
But it was great.
No, the reason I asked is because when I first came in, everybody talked about the Spinal Tap and the roof falling on them with the water and the whole deal on the show, and they were all pissed off because it wasn't...
Because it wasn't planned.
It wasn't planned. But
I tell you, it would have been a perfect scene for
exactly,
the movie.
Exactly.
Spinal Tap.
Right.
You know?
Exactly, so I brought it up. It's just one of those events that happened in the channel a lot. Well, when I came in, a few weeks after I came in, I just completely ripped out the roof, that false roof, and it became the old cavern. And, you know, and people were slam dancing then and what have you. And the unfortunate thing is they were hanging on the roof and climbing up into here, but it was better without the false thing. And then, as you know, what happened down in Rhode Island after that with the false roof and all
that
stuff
happened.
Yeah, the station thing.
Yeah, the station thing.
I don't know if you remember, Chachi, where we first met, and I don't think Dinky knows, but you and it was Beatle business. You just started at BCN, I think, when we did the Beatle convention at the Sheraton in Boston with Russ Demeo.
That's correct,
and
I remember
Peter
that.
Brown and Stephen Gaines were launching the Love You Make book, and I was launching my Rock Apple Tours, which was a package tour for Beatle fans to London and Liverpool, and you and I were set up next to each other at the tables, and you were there with BCN as a rep, and we chatted away quite a bit. And in fact, you arranged, I'm pretty sure it was you brought me into BCN that year on a Sunday morning to do a Beatle appraisal thing over the phones. People were calling with the collectibles, and we were telling them what they were worth, and you were a rookie then, and I was too.
Yeah, we go back many years. I don't exactly remember that, but
that's where I remember meeting you the first time. And then, of course, over the years with Tony Bennett at the Melody Tent with Danny and everybody, I'd see you through the years down there. But
yeah.
I know the Beatle connection was the first connection I made with you.
And it's really funny because about a month ago, I interviewed Stephen Gaines, putting out, you know, a second edition to that book.
Yeah.
And that was a great conversation. But yeah, I remember Russ Demeo and doing those Beatle conventions.
I was driving Stephen and Peter around in my old Vega over to ERS and to the other stations to get promos going that day and hustling with them. But it was a real, you know, it was a thrill to work with them at that point.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And you know, one of the great things that I enjoyed about the channel were our WBCN lunchtime concerts.
Oh, love
them. And we would do them at various clubs, but Channel was a favorite. The Channel was a favorite location for us, and everyone would get their first mill of beer for free, and then we would
get the free hot dog.
Steaming hot dogs. Everyone could eat hot dogs, and we got some of the greatest, you know, local and some major bands.
I'll give you the line again, because we've mentioned it several times on the podcast. You know, those hot dogs were... you know what's in a hot dog, Chachi?
Now
imagine what's in a free one.
Well, they do say recently a study was done. Every hot dog takes 30 minutes off of your life, every hot dog that you eat. But at this point in our lives, maybe it doesn't quite matter. But I do enjoy a hot dog on occasion, not often. But yeah, those lunchtime shows were so much fun. We'd get there in the morning and... Yeah. We always broadcast live, whether it was Tank or Bradley J, and my job was to handle, you know, everyone get a ticket for a free Miller beer, which is not allowed any longer, and I'd supervise getting the hot dogs cooked, because it was all of our BCN staffers doing that.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. And we got some major bands. I mean, I remember Don DeLacy from RCA Records came in and said, hey, we have a brand new artist. She was standing in the lobby, and she did a lunchtime show for us. I can't remember exactly which venue, but it was Cyndi Lauper.
Yep.
And then Hootie and the Blowfish did a lunchtime show. Yep. So there were some national acts, but a lot of local bands. I remember on Ash Wednesday, Oedipus thought it would be pretty ingenious. On Ash Wednesday, a religious holiday, obviously.
Right.
That we would have Shake the Faith play. So we thought that was kind of funny.
That's cool.
And look at those guys. They're still around, and they play on occasion all these years later. And Todd always, you know, recalls when Shake the Faith played our lunchtime show at the channel. It was something that's embedded in his memory. And And of course, we did all the lunchtime shows. We had Tribe. I would always introduce Tribe.
Remember Tribe on New Year's Eve, I think it was, or something that we did.
Yeah, I think it was a New Year's show.
New Year's show, and you did it live on BCN.
And of course, the BCN DJs were always part of the club. At the nights, Carmelita and Tammy
Carter. And,
they'd take turns. Bradley, I work with quite a bit. They were always coming and taking nights each.
Tank would love the place.
Between the bands, yeah.
Tank turned the samurai over just going around the bend, going home one night from the channel.
Oh, yeah.
It was those days, they don't equal that anymore nowadays. Oh, venues don't have that same passion. People had a passion for the channel. It didn't matter who was playing. We should all head to the channel, and that would be where we meet at the end of the night.
Yeah, and I think that's what's changed. You buy a ticket now to see the artist or the headliner, and you go to their show. But the channel, you could go and not really know what you were going to get that night. But you just go for the scene, and sometimes you were pleasantly surprised, and sometimes you weren't.
That's right. It was all about the experience.
Exactly.
And we did so many promotions with the channel at BCN. And, I remember, the people at Don Law, I'd get some pushback. What are you doing at the channel now? Like, come on, we work with everybody, we're not exclusive to one venue.
That's right.
And the channel was just a very, very special place. It's sad that it's gone, but so many things in life have changed.
Yeah.
Listen, back then, I would go in, Warren Scott and David Alexander were my contacts, and they would pay us to MC, we go in, MC a show, go to the box office, get compensated for it, stay for the night, and I remember where I was planning on going to see Roy Orbison, but then something happened and I didn't, and then we all know what happened shortly after that. We lost Roy.
Right.
Was that the last show he played?
He played one more, I think, a private or something the night after, I think, in Worcester.
He split up the Traveling Wilburys just to do that. They wanted him to stay in England to get more stuff done, but he had these contracts they couldn't get out of, and Channel was one of them. And so he was going back and forth, and that's what happened there, just all the thing caught up.
Yeah, I think there was one more show after, and I for some reason Worcester's in my mind, but I read about it.
That's the diversity of the channel. It was so diverse, and no one else programs a club like that nowadays.
Oh yeah, and it's interesting because it wasn't so much programming as necessity. I think a lot on the part of the buyers. And I wasn't there that long. I was there 85 through 87, and then back when it closed. But in that time, it was very successful. 86 was one of the best years. That's when Dinky came in that year, and that's when we changed things up. But what we've talked about is just what you said. The diversity to us in there was, it was a different club every show.
Every show.
It was a different audience. It was a different vibe. What was interesting,
The afternoon, when you were talking about in an all-ages show in the afternoon, and then all of a sudden you get stuff like King Sing the Idea at night and stuff like that, and reggae at night, or sometimes, the striper in the afternoon with the kids. And then it was definitely somebody big at night. And every time it was packed in the afternoon, it was packed at night. And it was fun for people, for everyone that was in there. I mean, we only had a couple of weird nights and stuff when people decided, we're going to shoot up the place, or we're going to do this, or we're going to do that.
Well, that's the example of the diversity. The channel was catering to all age people of all ages,
exactly,
of all likes and dislikes for music. They tried to serve all people.
Oh yeah.
And it was an all inclusive place. No matter what kind of music you liked, check the schedule in the Boston Phoenix or the Real Paper. The schedule, and there's bound to be a band that interests you, whether you like rock music or any other genre.
I remember
that's
one
what
of
the
my
channel was all about.
One of my favorite days in '91 was going from All Ages, Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch, with Mark Wahlberg on a Saturday afternoon, and loading in the Damned at the same time Mark was playing to do the Damned at night.
God, that's amazing.
That was a good day. That was a fun day.
And, you know, the local rock stars would show up. You know, the Aerosmith guys, yep. Wolf. I mean, everyone went to the channel because no one busted anyone's balls. No one was, you know, chasing around Steven Tyler. I want your autograph. It was just a great vibe.
Everybody was too cool, you know.
Many artists that were playing, even Boston Gardner would come down and see what's going on, especially the metal guys in the late 80s.
Well, some of the bands we started, I mean, Extreme in there were house metal band. The Boston started in there.
I was just
reminded, Mike Sandman, I remember him coming in and booking the back room to launch his new band.
You know, Dick, I'm a huge Mick Fleetwood fan, great drummer. I mean, when you listen to his songs, and then when I read a long time ago that he would stop by and see you when he was in town.
Oh, yeah.
Just amazing, man. You have such a history, Dinky, really.
Christine would come by too. She always loves to see what's going on. And
amazing.
But we did a Bonnie Raitt show on there for the girls at Thanksgiving. No, it was.
I remember that, yeah. And Bonnie
looks out at me and says, oh, no. She says, I hope you don't say anything.
Yeah, about your story.
I got some really interesting stories with Bonnie, but the thing is that these are talented musicians, talented artists in their own right. You had fun. I introduced Dorothy with his band.
Chris
Dorothy, Gangarina.
Yeah.
Gangrene.
First time I ever came out, I didn't know what it were, and this, that, and the other. The next thing they set off, I says, this is pretty decent for what they're trying to do with you. The next thing I know, they're like a number one band in that particular genre in Boston.
The local punk band. I love Gangrene. Yeah.
I'm going like, wow, this is, but they were good at what they did. There was so many, like you said, Tribe was incredible. Shake the Faith, yes, with Todd Erickson and stuff. Now they're doing the Christian rock, I think.
We'd go through everything. I mean, we would have David Ruffin and Eddie Kendricks to Charlie Watts.
Oh, yeah. Well, the fun part about it is, I don't know whether you were at that Striper show, but that Striper show brought like 3,000 kids trying to get in from New Hampshire.
Yeah.
In buses.
Wow, no, I was not at that show.
Rockers on a Sunday afternoon.
It was unbelievable. They were throwing Bibles in the audience. And
no bars open.
No bars. It was just, they were good at rock, I'm saying, but, the politics were different.
We did some fun ones. You know, we've talked about...
Mark Prento and stuff and the turkey drops it stuff. And
oh, my God. Some of those things we did in the parking lot, yes.
Yep.
Amazing. We had so much fun. And you know what was always fun was seeing Sal and the Stompers.
Oh, play always.
The they were so great.
Yeah. Peter Lembo was with us 2 weeks ago. He did a show with us, so that'll be in the series.
Oh, I love Peter. Good
guy. We had Peter in here, and we had a good laugh with him.
He went through a bunch of stuff that we'd never heard of before and stuff and we just couldn't stop laughing, especially when I was trying to edit it. I said, Tony, we're supposed to have this for like half an hour, 45 minutes. We got an hour and 15 to 20 with Peter. He just wouldn't stop. He was so funny because he decided to bring in all the stuff that was happening at that particular time in Boston, not just Stomper stuff, but what he was into.
Yeah, you guys had a good perspective because you were running around town all the time.
Yeah, you guys were on top of it. And
we were just kind of focused in there and particularly... You know, it was exciting for us, and Dinky and I have talked about this again. That particular year, 86, 85, 86,
yeah.
We were kind of left alone because if you remember, the bookers, Warren and all those guys, were trying to start up and establish the entertainment network across town. So they weren't at the club that much at that point. So they'd book all these heavy bookings and we'd just sit there and deal with them.
We had to deal with it.
And you're right about BCN. I mean, we did so many events. That's why a lot of it is sketchy, because we were just always doing events. And I look back and I just wish I kept a diary like Carter Aaron did,
right?
To record all these memories in some sort of a journal. But I never did. But we did so many different events, it's hard to keep track.
Yeah, no.
But the channel was always memorable. We loved the channel.
I get it. That's great.
We Well, I'm laughing because I can visualise you guys running around right now.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Tank outside of the stage yelling and stuff.
We'd have been in there dealing with the bands most of the day, and then we'd be sitting there going, "Oh God, now here come the radio guys."
Yeah, right, right. And we did many live broadcasts. The one that I remember, one of them, we did a lot of them. Yeah. Bow Wow Wow, we did.
Yeah, yeah.
One
yeah.
of my favorites. They were great, but we always did live broadcasts and promotions at the channel.
Were you there the night the Fine Young Cannibals played and the tear gas went off?
I recall being there. I can't remember that.
That was a wild
one. But I'm a huge Fine Young Cannibals fan.
Yeah, we had to evacuate the club at like 1:30 in the morning because somebody let our tear gas canister off by the stage. And then we ended up staying open till about 3:30 to do the show.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I remember seeing them at Great Woods. They were so good. I wish they stayed together because they were just a great band.
There were so many good bands that came through. I mean, I'm amazed to see like the Fools and the Stompers still performing and what have you. You know, the way that they're still at it, you know. And Sal's doing a really good job right now and stuff with what he's doing with... And you've got Tom Hambridge, I mean, a genius that came out of there, you know?
That's right.
What he's doing in the blues thing. I beat him on one thing. He was a number one blues thing. I beat him 2 years before that. I was a number one blues with the Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, Tommy's doing great.
Live at the Shrine Auditorium in L.A. It was actually the exposition hall downstairs. And, mine got to number one. I couldn't believe it. I was freaked out.
Wow. Nice.
In the blues chart. But Tom's gets to number one now just about every day. He's got bands left and right. He's playing in bands. And he's really looking after Buddy Guy, really looking after that guy.
Yep.
You know, that's another talent that really needed someone like that.
And he's played with Ringo a few times, you know that, Church? Yeah.
I've been backstage with Tom and Tommy, Ringo.
When he's been sitting in with Ringo.
Yeah. Yep. Tom and I go back, just like you guys. Tom would come into to BCN and hang out in my office. I distinctly remember one day he came in and said, "I'm moving to Nashville." And I was so bummed because Tom and I were close.
Yeah.
And we still are. We talk on occasion and trade messages. But what he's done with his career, as far as Sal Baglio, the guy still has his voice. He still, you know, has the talent and the drive. He's playing all the time. And then you talk to people like John Butcher, who tell stories about being on stage playing at the channel and then looking down and seeing Steven Tyler right up front, like rocking with the audience, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Those are the kinds of memories that we love.
Well, it's good. It's good. And thanks for joining us, Chachi.
Definitely. Thank you, Chachi, for joining us.
Gentlemen, it's a pleasure. I love both of you guys. Dinky, I think you're awesome. God bless you. Praying for both of you and good health. And we'll do a lot of Beatles stuff together, Tony.
Yes, we will.
And Dinky, I hope to see you soon. And I'm here whenever you need anything.
We're of the age, Chachi, where the torch is being passed too. So if we're going to keep the Beatle thing going, we need to do it for a while longer.
We sure do.
All right, man.
God bless you guys, man. Thanks for the invite. I love talking to you.
Thanks, Chach.
Thanks.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks for being on Two Pints in the Corner with us, lad. Thank you.
My pleasure, you guys. I love you.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.